Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. I have a strong conviction that what we see in our government, and as I look at how everything is playing out, the future of the 2024 election is unfolding in front of us. And I have been asking you, what type of president? Now, these are two separate questions. What type of president does America deserve? And the more important question is, what type of president does America need? If you only care about a little bit of vengeance and a slap down against liberals or what have you, then I think America deserves that, you know, the orange man back in the office. I think they deserve a little bully that's going to, you know, at least they believe he's going to provide the justice that they all duly that America deserves. Again, this is the president that America deserves. But what America needs is a president willing to lead the states to take back their constitution and completely disassemble this federal leviathan that even the orange man rules over and enjoys his power. It is time we have, America needs a president that is not seeking power, but seeking to restore constitutional compliance and our liberties. I don't care how many people in America want communism. There's no room in America for a revolt or for an abandonment of our government. It doesn't allow it. And as a matter of fact, the Constitution requires that if you can't support it, you can't be a citizen. That's what your oath to be a citizen is, to support and defend the Constitution, not your ideology, not to overthrow. That is an insurrection, and those are insurrection paradigms. Anyway, let me just kind of move forward. We just did a presentation last night with the Citizens for Liberty in South Dakota. Awesome people. I can tell you that the heartland of America is pounding, and they want to see the changes that they so badly deserve and need. And so most of America, I believe, this is why we have so many red counties. We don't have all these red counties because they want drag queen storytelling in your library, in your school, or exposing your children to that type of subject matter, period. I'm here to tell you, folks, people want this country back, and it's now or never. Now, I've got a big presentation we're going to be doing on Monday. So there's a good chance that we may not make it back because of weather or what have you, because it's a couple-hour drive, and it is in the morning. And so what we'll have a show ready for you, like we always do. I'll pre-record the show. But it's whether we get back to get it played, whether we have a difficulty or what have you. So don't be surprised if you hear, you know, an episode that's going through the Constitution, because that's what we've uploaded. And so those are shows we've played before, but they're very relevant because this is where we're going through the Constitution line by line. And so what is better for your time than actually receiving content that absolutely places full context to what our problem really is and what we need to do about it? Because if it is something that is not in compliance with the Constitution, then it is a problem. Believe me, 100 years ago, when the federal government was assuming the role of education, even longer than that, when they assumed the role of the Department of Interior or the Department of Home, most people, oh, well, I don't see that as a problem, and it didn't become a problem. But you talk to anybody that's lost their land to BLM. You talk to anybody that has, you know, been, you know, oppressed and or harassed and are going through an incredible nightmare because of federal government overreach in managing their land or trying to take their land, creating hostilities to basically make their land worthless. They're actually behind this whole process of passing laws so that you can't dig new wells to feed your cattle or to water your crops. Folks, as I've told you, when the government is actually striking out and hurting what we do in capacities they have no constitutional authority, because remember, we never amended the Constitution to allow them to do these things. These are not enumerated powers that they're executing. They do not have the enumerated roles and responsibilities, nor can they possess these properties. It is not enumerated in our Constitution. So anyway, as you know, it's Feedback Friday. And actually, I've really only got one really thing that stands out. I was asked a question yesterday, would I run for president? And I said, no, it's not my intent to try to run a campaign. I believe that at this point in time, you know, we need other people. And I think that that stuff is going to naturally, you know, flush itself out. There's no doubt in my mind. If we get people demanding compliance of the Constitution, then we're going to get ourselves in a position where great people are going to be coming forward as presidents. Great, because we'll finally understand what we should be doing and actually how to contain government once again. And that, to me, is the secret. But the one question I got outside of the presentation, and it's from Kenny B., he wanted to know my opinion on Pelosi and her stepping down. And, folks, this is a sign, not that she is just quitting or that, you know, this is a sign. This is not a good sign. Because Pelosi actually had a moderate approach to the extreme leftists. And so, I mean, she was already corrupt. She was already an evil and bad person. But what makes you think whoever steps into that seat won't be equally corrupt? Oh, they will be. But their willingness to go further. I see what Pelosi did is kind of similar to what Calvin Coolidge did. When Calvin Coolidge was asked to run for president against FDR, as FDR had won his first term, and they said, they knew Hoover was not the guy. As a matter of fact, they realized Hoover was too radical. He was a progressive as a Republican. And so, and I told, I've covered that several times. And even Coolidge was he's a self-proclaimed progressive. However, when they asked him to actually step in, and this is two terms, 8 years after he stepped out, and he saw all of the changes that the federal government or that Hoover and FDR were pushing, all of these things were unconstitutional, and he knew it. The projects that they were building for blacks and, you know, the Negro project that was coming forth, all of these types of things, you know, he was just absolutely aghast with. And when they asked him, would you please run for president? He says, I'm a progressive, but I'm not that progressive. I don't know how to deal with that. I don't know what to do about these things. And that tells you that he himself had to bow out because he just can't hold those logs back. They're going downriver. And I think this is the same thing with Pelosi. I think Pelosi finally realized that she cannot contain this extreme leftist movement in the ranks of Congress. And so they're going to be doing things you can just plan on. They're going to be doing things that are going to be very, very extreme. And whether we see these things as they're doing them and how, you know, and actually the more important thing is, will we get to a point where we recognize that the stink, what they do, is coming from them? Because the true intent is to try to have things happen as if it seems to be autonomous. I mean, That's the whole part of a conspiracy, is to try to make it so that it doesn't come back to you to say, oh, you did this. And there you go. So I don't think this is a good sign. I think that she's finally realized that she can't contain these logs anymore. And they're coming down river. And so they're going to do some damage. There's no doubt in my mind, because look at the election. You didn't get the red wave you wanted. And why was that? Well, that's because our elections aren't contained. We do not have local elections. We do not have a representative government. We have a party government that allows, you know, an open warfare and foreign influence, literally foreign influence in your elections. I'll just really briefly tell you how we have foreign influence. If you're having a ballot measure, you're voting for something like a representative in your county, then how is it that people from other counties can come in as PACs or what have you? These are foreigners. They're not citizens of your county. So if they're not citizens of your county, they should have no say. They should have no influence on your elections. It's even more repugnant to think a citizen of a different state can come in, or a citizen of a different country. Those are even double foreigners. They're not a citizen of your county, nor are they a citizen of your state. Bottom line, who is it that deserves the say, and who gets to choose your representative? It should be you, not anybody outside your county, not anybody outside your state. And so we have to start making elections local. It's really, to me, it's that simple. But as you can tell, we're going into a hard break. So we'll be right back after these two promos, and we'll be back with Madison's report. Actually, we'll do a little overview. We'll be right back after this.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so far what we've been covering is, what we've covered, is the Kentucky resolution and the Virginia resolution is what we covered yesterday. And so the most important part that I want to highlight out of the Kentucky resolution is what Thomas Jefferson accomplished in that. He audited each of the acts and how they violated the Constitution. This is very important. The audit really only needs to be done once. All you have to do is clearly articulate and identify how each of these acts violated a part of the Constitution and or how the Constitution is being violated by parts of the acts. And so that's what he did. He provided how each of them violated what parts and then what parts of the Constitution basically asserts that the federal government has no authority, such as the 10th Amendment and so forth, to do these types of things. So anyway, it was a very well articulated argument, or I should say audit. So in other words, when we're looking back at the macro view, what did these men do? Well, they first had to definitize exactly what the violations were that were occurring so they could articulate that these things are unconstitutional. And who are they talking to? They weren't just, you know, complaining. They were talking to the parties. So this is where Jefferson, in the Kentucky Resolutions, basically made a plea out to each of the states. He sent these resolutions out to each of the states and said, look, these are violations, and we need to get together and form committees of conference and correspondence so that we can figure out what we need to do to get the federal government back into compliance. Madison in kind, 2 months later, basically forwarded out, or they created these resolutions with the Virginia legislature. Now, Madison was not in the Virginia legislature at this time. He actually went in and actually worked with them and counseled them. And I can't imagine how awesome those men, I mean, that one experience itself had to have been a career changer for each of these men. It had to have been truly an eye-opening experience to start realizing the inner workings of this compact, because many people looked at it, they just didn't have the full understanding of this stuff. And so in Resolution 3 of the Virginia Resolutions, this is where Madison basically says, whenever there are deliberate, palpable, and dangerous exercises of other powers not granted by the said compact, the states who are parties thereto have the right and are duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of the evil and for maintaining within their respective limits the authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to them. So this is huge, folks, because when he basically says that those who created the compact as the parties, now let me ask you this, who are the parties that created your state constitution? Don't tell me it was the people. It was the counties who sent delegates to a convention in the like manner as the U.S. Constitution. We have been told that it was we the people, and it's we the people this, we the people that. That is to get you to accept that this is a democracy that requires we the people. Actually, it only requires a majority of your counties. Again, let's take a look at what I mentioned in the first segment. Most of every state, has red counties. In other words, the majority of the counties in each of the states are red. There is no reason why these red counties can't reel in your state government. But the fact is that Reynolds v. Sims and other court rulings have, unconstitutional court rulings, have basically granted unconstitutional power to population centers to rule you. It's time to wake up, folks. So, as we kind of go through the Virginia resolutions, that one part is the most powerful because Madison hits the nail right on the head. He basically identifies who has the authority and who has to do this. It is because we're a representative government. It shouldn't be we the people. We have representatives to be our warriors. And so who are your representatives to go up against your state? That's right, your county commissioners, your county supervisors. So
Who is it that has the authority to go up against your county commissioners, and how hard is this? It's right there in your hometown, practically. I mean, look at your county. Look at what you have to do to travel to your county seat. It's not that far. It's not like going to your capital. I mean, some people live around the capital. As a matter of fact, in some of the states, the capital has, you know, a lot of people living around them. But then we have many states that the capitals are actually one of the smaller cities. You know, look at Missouri. Missouri has Kansas City and it has St. Louis. And I forget, I believe it's Lincoln. No, it's not Lincoln. Jackson or Jefferson. I'm sorry. I've probably got a lot of texts coming in telling me what the capital of Missouri is. But nevertheless, it's a small town in contrast to St. Louis and to Kansas City. And my point is, and it's the same thing with Nebraska. It's the same thing with most of the flyover states, that the bigger cities are usually hubs around where the commerce is. And when they created these states, you know, they had no idea what was really going to grow in commerce, which is why Pierre, or whatever you want to call it, of South Dakota, is the primary city. And so that's why, you know, we try to teach kids, you know, geography and these types of things. And but they don't teach the reason why they created these capitals, without understanding where the commerce was going to actually flourish, because we had to find some place. And a lot of times, those capitals, I mean, look at California. It's Sacramento. It's not San Francisco. It's not L.A. It's not San Diego. I mean, there's some really great cities along the port. Why didn't they use a port city? Why Sacramento? Salem? Olympia? So when we start looking at, you know, what they chose, what they usually tried to do is they tried to choose an area that was kind of centered on the state. So as the state grew, it would, you know, have this opportunity. Now, on the West Coast, I think Olympia and Salem, well, Salem was definitely not centered, but I think Olympia, it is somewhat centered on the state on the coastal side, because they didn't see a lot of development on the west or the eastern side of the mountains. But I'm going down a rat hole, so forgive me. But the point is that we, the people, we don't have another representative than our county commissioners. So we're the ones that have to put pressure on them so that they will represent us in putting pressure on the states, so that the states will then represent us to putting pressure on the federal government. That's the chain of command in our government. That's how it's supposed to work. But if you just gripe and moan and complain, then we're never going to get things done. But if we're using First Amendment petitions, now we're legally charging them with violations that they have to go up to the state capitol. So anyway, hopefully this all starts to pan out as we go through the process of what needs to be done. But what I also want to add in Madison's resolution was Resolution 7. So the third resolution and the seventh resolution really have what I consider the two-punch blow, because the second part of this was that the general, this is second blow here, the General Assembly of Virginia doth solemnly appeal to the like dispositions of the other states in confidence that they will now concur with this Commonwealth in declaring, as it does hereby declare, that the acts aforesaid are unconstitutional, and that the necessary and proper measures will be taken by each for cooperating with this state. Right there. In other words, now we've told you you're obligated, you're duty bound, you're legally obligated to do this. So now we have an expectation that you will take the necessary and proper measures to take and cooperating with this state in maintaining the state's authorities, the state's rights, and the state's liberties referred to the states respectively or to the people. So now that we've kind of caught up on these resolutions, what ended up happening is the states actually came back and slapped down, you know, this concept of getting together and calling for this, you know, convention, if you want to call it that. And we're not talking about an Article 5 convention. When Jefferson called for committees of conference and correspondence, because they didn't have telecommuting. They needed to convene into a body. They had to physically get together to actually have a timely conversation of what to do. And so it was kind of like forming a Continental Congress or a side body. And if you look at other points in time, as a matter of fact, when Jefferson was in office, the northern states actually convened a convention in Connecticut to determine whether they were going to leave the Union or not. So it's not a convention at all to amend the Constitution. It is a convention in those days to get together. Now, today we don't even have to convene in one body. We have the technology to actually telecommute or work online to basically virtually meet so that we can actually coordinate and do this very quickly. But anyway, when we come back, I'm going to get into Thomas Jefferson's resolutions of 1799. This is basically closing the loop, and then this is where they have to make a change to their plans. We'll be right back after this.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so actually, how many months later was Jefferson's reply? I believe, so this was December 3rd, 1799. So it was basically almost a year later when he finally responded from the last of the states, or when he felt he had enough of the states and had a good consensus on their views of what the federal government was doing with the Alien and Sedition Acts, he finally penned this response, and it was sent out by the good legislators of Kentucky. Again, this is the Kentucky Resolutions of 1799. Now, some sites, let me add this, some sites actually show that the Kentucky Resolutions of 1798 are draft. Actually, they weren't drafts, and they want to get you to believe that the final resolutions, which had nothing to do with the initial resolutions, are the ultimate resolutions, that the first set was just draft. Folks, when you actually promulgate, when you make resolutions, you send them out, that's not a draft, that is a submission. And so they submitted these and promulgated the 1798 resolution. So when you see any site that is labeling it as draft, make sure you make a mental note that this site actually is trying to marginalize what this document or what that document really is and what it does. And so, and the Avalon site is doing that. Most of these school sites are going to try to marginalize. They put it out there. And as a matter of fact, I've actually come across some things like quotations in the Constitution that do not jive directly with the Constitution. In other words, a word is either an editing problem or something like that. It's not common, but it's been discovered, and I forget a long time ago, I think it was with Article 4 or something like that, where how they printed the Constitution wasn't word for word. There was something off about it. But anyhow, this is what Jefferson says in December 1799. Basically a year after the Kentucky resolutions went out. We cannot, however, lament. I mean, this is the second paragraph, I believe. Let me make sure I've got that right. Yeah, this is the second paragraph. So we cannot, however, lament that in the discussion of those interesting subjects by sundry or by a variety of the legislatures of our sister states, unfounded suggestions and uncandid insinuations derogatory of the true character and principles of the good people of this commonwealth have been substituted in place of fair reasoning and sound argument. Our opinions of those alarming measures of the general government, together with our reasons for those opinions, were detailed with decency and with temper and submitted to the discussion and judgment of our fellow citizens throughout the Union. Now, as brilliant as Jefferson and Madison were, and other men like Nicholas and so forth, the state legislatures had a lot of, let's say, not so brilliant. And so when we get to some of these other states, I mean, where were the majority of, you know, I'll just say the intellectual power that, you know, created the revolution, that created these paradigms, where was that really coming from? Well, North Carolina was one of those states. It had, you know, a lot of individual leaders. But again, we're only talking about a handful of men. Most people think it was we the people. Most people think that this was a huge paradigm that, you know, spread from shining sea to shining sea, right? And so that's not the case. You have to understand that the brilliance and the profound understanding of what was being done, what was in that document, did not necessarily translate. How many people in 1799 that were in the state legislatures, how many of them actually took classes on the U.S. Constitution? Zero. Which means that it's not like they were really taught. They were taught the basics, such as Latin and English and, you know, the fundamental R's of education and some law and so forth. But nobody would, they didn't have really good classes on the Constitution. It was a document right there. Go read it. And so I think the framers marginalized, and I do believe that when you read the Constitution, it is pretty clear for the most part, but it only takes a forked tongue to start redefining the language of the Constitution to subvert it. John Marshall was very good at this. Alexander Hamilton was good at this because what they did was they played with words and they used implications. And so when people, oh, well, you know, that kind of makes sense. And especially if it aligns with, you know, something for you, like here's an opportunity as Congress to become more powerful and we can do more and make more money or what have you, for whatever the reasons of greed and, you know, lust for power, avarice, whatever, they made these decisions to do these things. And the average person didn't really understand. Douglas V. Gibbs has a book, because we talked about this, and so he finally got the inspiration to write a book, and I think it's either 7 or 9 of the men who were, you know, were more the principal culprits of perverting our Constitution, and John Marshall was one of them. He leads the pack, and I would highly recommend you getting that book, because bottom line, if you really want to understand how we got off this case. But I'll tell you something, folks. There may have been these men, but these men were only capable of doing this due to ignorance. And as we moved away from, and we basically relied heavily upon the minds of these justices and these other political leaders, and we relied upon the loyal vigilance of our state legislators and our state leaders and so forth, who were hoodwinking the shenanigans of these other, you know, I'll say nefarious politicians. Well, folks, this is what we got. They brought us down this path, and they told us, oh, yeah, we have all the power to do this. We can do this. We're doing this. We're doing this for you. And whether you let them do it or not, it doesn't matter. They were violating the Constitution. Just to be clear, just because we allowed things to happen doesn't make it constitutional. The only way it becomes constitutional is through an Article 5 amendment. It's that simple. And the only way that something becomes added to the Constitution or becomes law or legal in the Union is when 3/4 of the states ratify or accept that change. It doesn't matter if we've got 5 out of 4 justices in the Supreme Court to agree. It doesn't matter if they all agree. It doesn't matter if every person in the federal government agrees. They have no power over that compact. They are not parties to that compact. It's that simple. So, and this isn't rocket science. This is not rocket science. And I know there are, you know, a lot of you get this, and some of you are still swallowing this. Seems like a big pill. I'm telling you, this is minuscule. This is really easy to get. The parties that created the Constitution are the parties to the Constitution, which means that they're the only ones that can define, change, and amend it. And the brilliance in this design is just astounding. But anyway, moving on, as we go down, let me see, into the 4th paragraph, this is the resolution. Now, this is where Jefferson makes this assertion that states can nullify federal law. However, they don't nullify it. He only makes this hardcore assertion. Now, the fact is that it's not placed here in this resolution or in the Kentucky resolutions or anywhere else what a state must do if it nullifies a law of the Union. It must secede. It must leave the Union. And so this is what he says, that if those who administer the general government be permitted to transgress the limits fixed by that compact, by a total disregard to the special delegations of power therein contained, annihilation of the state governments and the erection upon their ruins of a general consolidated government will be the inevitable consequence, that the principle and construction contended for by sundry of the states or a variety of the states' legislatures, that the general government is the exclusive judge of the extent of the powers delegated to it, stop nothing short of despotism, since this discretion of those who administer the government and not the Constitution would be the measure of their powers, that the several states who formed that instrument, being sovereign and independent, have the unquestionable right to judge of its infractions. And I don't want to continue. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pick it back up at that the several states who formed the instrument. When he says instrument, he's talking about the Constitution, of course, but we're going to bring it right back to this point when we come back from these promos. Thank you so much.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so picking it right back up, because I'm hoping to get into Madison's report on the Virginia resolutions, this is what Jefferson says, that the several states who formed that instrument, being sovereign and independent, have the unquestionable right to judge of its infraction, and that a nullification by those sovereignties of all unauthorized acts done under color of that instrument is the rightful remedy. Now, see, what he's talking about is he's talking about the plurality. That is the rightful remedy, that this nullification by the sovereignties, not by a single state. So what they were looking to do was actually use interposition by getting enough states to come along and say, we don't accept what you just did. You violated our compact. The problem is that at this point in time, they didn't have Section 3 of the 14th Amendment so that they could actually remove these men who had blood on their hands by voting for and allowing these acts to move forward. And even so, got to remember, Section 3 doesn't allow the removal of John Adams, but it does set up, it even allows the setup of the impeachment of John Adams. Had these men had their way, we would have actually had the first major shakeup had Section 3 of the 14th Amendment been available. This is where, and I believe this is where we discovered that, yes, even among the men at this point in time, honor and integrity within politics was becoming a rarity. It was evaporating in America. And we're talking about the late 1700s, you know, right after the ink was drying, after these men did what they did, all of a sudden we can see the culprits that were coming forth. And where did they come from? They came from the cabals of the states. So as I've been telling you, even though we had such virtuous leaders, there were those who were actually seeking to aggrandize. And Hamilton was one of the chief principals in driving this and creating this national cabal, which required action. And this is why what Jefferson and Madison actually did. But anyway, let me keep going. That this Commonwealth does upon the most deliberate reconsideration declare that the said alien and sedition laws are, in their opinion, palpable or basically obvious and blatant violations of the said Constitution. And however cheerfully it may be disposed to surrender its opinion to the majority of its sister states in matters of ordinary or doubtful policy, yet in momentous regulations like the present, which so vitally wound the best rights of the citizen, it would consider a silent acquiescence as highly criminal, that although this Commonwealth, as a party to the federal compact, will bow to the laws of the Union, yet it does at the same time declare that it will not now nor ever hereafter cease to oppose in a constitutional manner every attempt from what quarter soever offered to violate that compact. He doesn't talk about nullification here, but he's clearly saying we're accepting this, but it doesn't mean that we're not going to use every constitutional manner possible in fighting these tyrannical acts, this unconstitutional behavior. And folks, to be clear, they weren't doing and they weren't submitting petitions for an Article 5 convention. They knew that an amendment to the Constitution wouldn't solve this problem. That compliance of the Constitution was the only remedy that the states needed to demand compliance from the federal government. If you grasp this concept, how can you even think that an Article 5 convention is even a play on the table at this point in time? And when we look in context to the few things that they were dealing with, in contrast to today, where we have such a sundry, such an enormous variety, an overwhelming variety of infractions and violations of the Constitution, to where we're being ran bankrupt. They're actually committing warfare in every facet in America against us. How would we not be doing what they talked about doing? In using every constitutional manner, every attempt from whatever quarter soever, against all of these violations of the compact. And Republic Review is that process. And so he does talk about the states having this right of nullification. And he does that a little bit before this. I'm not trying to censor it out, because he does say. But they're not nullifying. That's the important part, that they are not using nullification, that they're going to continue to demand compliance. What happened to Kentucky? Why isn't Kentucky leading the charge today? As a matter of fact, I've reached out in Tennessee, and I've got, folks and even some legislators that I've responded to, and I can't get the fire going in Tennessee. Maybe we need to focus on Kentucky. Remember, Kentucky was the one that led the charge. I was thinking that actually Missouri might be the great state that would take this stand as well. And we've got movement in Missouri. And obviously we now have movement in South Dakota, and we've had movement in Wyoming. And it's interesting. I'm going to need to bring in to some of the candidates that are within Wyoming, because the perspective is interestingly changing, to where it seems like, once people are at the seat of power for a long time, they tend to become corrupt. And I think that may be the case going on in Wyoming. You've heard me say many, many times that if you want to be a constitutional standard Republican, you've got to go to Wyoming. And I still believe that at most local areas. But I do believe that those Republican Party, the grassroots party leadership, it stands to have some questions as to, you know, is their focus still on the Constitution? I don't know. I've got to have those conversations. But bottom line, we have movement in multiple states. It's just about getting people engaged, educated, and invigorated. So let me move into introducing you, because I've got about 3 minutes. So let's introduce you to the James Madison's Virginia Resolutions. So these came out in January of 1800, literally a month after Jefferson actually went through the process of, you know, going in this final, we have this right of nullification, but we're not going to, but we will do everything we can in our power. So Madison goes much further, and he is far more insightful in what has to happen. So what I'm going to do is I'm not going to read this, you know, from the beginning to the end. I am going to read highlights from this and what I've done, and I do this to most all my documents. I'll actually go through and highlight the entire text of the body of the document, and then I will hit the numbers, you know, with the Word document, just so I have a number for each paragraph. This way, I can cite to you which paragraph you will find this citation in. Now, in a document like this, it's reasonable because I think there's like 30 paragraphs. With the ratification debates, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. And so it's easy to count down to 20 or something like that. But if I say 134, the 134th paragraph on this particular day, I mean, that's boom, 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 boom. I mean, you've got to do a lot of counting to get there. It becomes ridiculous. You're better off just doing a word search for how that paragraph starts or for a key string of words in that paragraph. But anyway, I do this. I highlight the paragraphs so that you know where I am, so that you can go read these for yourself. But I am telling you, just as I have said before, you need to read all of these documents a couple of times. The more you read them, the better, the more sense it'll make, and the more enlightening you'll become on this concept of state sovereignty over that Constitution. So, paragraph 6 is where we're going to start off with, and I've got 1 minute to do this. No favorable comment can be made on the sentiments here expressed to maintain and defend the Constitution of the United States and of their own state against every aggression, both foreign and domestic, and to support the government of the United States in all measures warranted by their constitutions are duties which the General Assembly ought always to feel, and to which on an occasion it was evidently proper to express their sincere and firm adherence. Let me just apply this, folks. Now, at this point in time, they didn't have county governments. They didn't have people electing county commissioners. But the same principle applies, that the assembly of your counties have this equal onus, have this equal responsibility to ensure that government is always in compliance, and that they need to use the measures warranted by the Constitution to get these governments into compliance, which would be your state government and your federal government. So just remember that the counties didn't exist the way they do today. They did exist. They did create the state governments. That's proof. I mean, you can't refute that. The fact is that the counties themselves did not organize into an actual governing body of legislatures until a little bit later. Now, in many states, it was a little different, but that's the basic rule. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.